My name's Mike Rowe, and this is my job.
I explore the country looking for people who aren't afraid to get dirty.
The rock is fake. The penguin poo is real.
Hardworking men and women who earn an honest living.
That is the worst load of laundry I've ever seen.
Doing the kinds of jobs that make civilized life possible for the rest of us.
Now, get ready to get dirty.
Coming up on Dirty Jobs, I tear down termite-infested trees. It's fun. But tremendously treacherous.
I'm okay. Heads up, heads up, heads up. That was close, Doug.
And then, these animals have an unusual trait.
You're telling me the goats here pass out?
They'll fall over for about 5-10 seconds.
Stop! He's down.
But everything else about these little guys is, well, very regular.
This would be their poo, I suppose. I'd expect something bigger from a goat.
And then...
This is the Audubon Insectarium Insect Rearing Facility.
Say that again.
It's an exclusive hotel for creepy, crawly little bugs, where the attentive staff pampers most of the guests.
I just put fresh food in there.
Yeah.
But some guests...
Squish them. Squish them.
They kill.
Oh, God. How many experts does it take to remove one out-of-control bird of paradise from one Southern California backyard? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 and a half.
It's hard to see, but there actually is a house back there. It's hidden by an overgrown combination of palm trees and birds of paradise. The new homeowners want to actually see their house, so they called in a crew of tree experts to tear down the jungle.
Now, Giovanni, I am correct in assuming this bird of paradise is, in fact, out of control.
Yes, it is.
And this is Giovanni Capuano, and you basically got a crew here, guys, from a tree trimming service.
Mm-hmm.
So is the goal today to trim this or to just make it go away?
Disappear.
And this is the biggest bird of paradise I've ever seen. Is this unusual?
It's rare that you see something this big. You can see this is all one huge stump.
If we could see into the ground right now with X-ray vision, where would these roots be going? What would
all
they be
over.
Doing?
They'll be all over, like spaghetti lines, all over.
Spaghetti.
Yeah.
Giovanni, of course you're going to say spaghetti. Okay. Now that's not part of a bird of paradise.
No, no, no.
That's a palm tree.
Palm tree. And cut it, and then we'll piece it all the way down.
Wait a minute. Somebody climbs
all the way to the
top of the palm and then cuts it off in sections?
Sections.
This gets better and better.
After sizing up, our adversary, chainsaw expert Leonardo, helped me pick my weapon.
That's our 28.
What do you recommend?
We recommend to use this one right here.
This guy?
Yeah.
Well, this is a tiny little thing. This is like a...
12-inch.
It's like a little girl's chainsaw.
Yeah.
Now, see, that's a little more. What about the big 28? Oh! What is this, 35 pounds or so?
Yeah.
Oh, my. Just so I'm clear, you hooked this thing onto your belt.
On my belt.
And you,
I'm climbing
climb.
100 feet high.
100 feet high?
When that hanging over.
Like that tree over there?
A little bit more higher.
That's insane. I'm not sure I believe you. No offense, but some things you just have to see.
What we call a spike.
And just like that, Leonardo put on his safety gear, looked around for the nearest tree, and showed me what the men of Capuano Tree Service do every day.
Not the most flattering angle, perhaps, but a good representation of Leonardo in action. And this is what he does, day in and day out. The tree behind me is about 75 feet. Leonardo got to where he is in about a minute. He'll get to the top, take care of business, and shinny on down. It's what he does. I've been kicked by ostriches. I've been snapped at by alligators. I've been bitten by sharks. I ain't doing that.
But I will work down here on terra firma. In the U.S., about 450,000 people trim trees professionally.
This is a piece of cake.
And these pros move fast.
It's the
things are heavier than you think.
Yes. Yes.
And they're basically soaked with water. See this part right here? Like if you could squeeze that really hard, water would just come squirting out.
Yep.
Safety is a huge concern for tree trimmers because there's a million ways to get hurt out here. Fortunately, the men of Capuano Tree Service practice all the proper safety procedures to avoid injury. Unfortunately, the Dirty Jobs crew does not.
That was close, Doug.
Well, if animated illustrations are any indication, I'd say this is one of the most treacherous machines I've ever had the pleasure to sit on. What's it called?
A chipper.
A chipper. And I take it from the name that we're going to chip the material we just took from the stump?
Correct. That's a feed wheel.
Yeah.
Feed you to the blades.
What would happen to a person that accidentally went into the chipper?
I heard when I purchased this machine, a guy in San Diego was working on one, and I guess a branch got caught. He stuck his foot in there, it grabbed him, took him in. 3 seconds, he was gone in the back of the truck.
This is nuts!
How long have you been doing this again, Leonardo?
12 years.
Anything bad ever happened to you up there off the ground in a tree?
Bees attacked.
Bee attack? What kind of bees?
Oh, they call it killer bee.
Let me be clear. You're up in a tree and you feel things stinging you, and they're killer bees?
Killer bees. Killer bees never make a regular nest. They make a hider nest.
Yeah?
You're not able to see that. Only able to feel the stung.
So they've got an invisible nest, and how high off the ground were you?
I was 25 feet high.
Were you, like, strapped in or in a bucket or
in
what?
In a bucket truck between 220 wires.
You're in a bucket. Uh-huh. You're stuck between electrical wires.
Yes.
You're being stung by killer bees. And your helper, who's inexperienced in running the bucket, is slowly...
Slowly.
...lowering you to safety while you're quickly dying.
Dying.
Were you screaming? Were you...
I was screaming hard.
Real, real high, like a little girl?
No, like a man.
Okay. Now, is there anything up in that tree that I should know about that could be waiting to sting or kill me?
No, you're
okay.
I can smell if they're there or not.
You can smell the bees?
You can smell the bees if they're there or not.
I smell something. Something bad.
Coming up.
Timber, dude.
Our director, Dave Farsky, pushes the envelope. And the Dirty Jobs big boss pushes back.
That almost hit me in the head.
No, when I was right here.
And then, I learned that all God's creatures, great and small, may be cute.
There you go. Oh.
But each and every one has a dirty side.
Is it bad to get worm medicine spit in your eye?
And later, enter the fascinating miniature world of leafcutter ants.
Just like humans, they have a dump.
And in that dump, well, they take a dump.
That's their feces and their urine.
I don't like that smell. I really don't.
Okay.
Right on the rotten part?
Right there.
All right.
Now you can feel safe.
Oh, yeah. I've never felt safer, Leo.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. At the beginning of the day, I said I wasn't going to be climbing a tree. But as the afternoon wore on, I became more confident about my tree trimming abilities. So I decided to give it a whirl. I've got to say, it was a lot of fun up there, knocking down wood, even if I only was about 7 feet off the ground.
Oh, I was perfect.
Dude, that almost hit you in the head.
No, when I was right here.
I told him.
This is what happens when people go behind the scenes. Dave Barsky sets up a shot of a lifetime, putting his life on the line. Once again, Eddie Barbini.
Eddie's the executive producer here at Dirty Jobs. He looks out for us.
But the fact that you expressed concern for Dave's well-being... Dave, come here. After all we've been through, yes, the shot got screwed up.
Sorry, Dave.
But we've all come together in a great... big hunk of love and understanding, and I just think that's, well, frankly, a little awkward. You guys sort it out.
Dude.
It occurs to me that stumps are really a lot like snowflakes in the sense that no two of them are identical. You can see at a glance what made this one special and unique and so difficult to expose this far. Lots and lots of different stumps all fused together, forming this one big giant amalgam of a mess.
I've changed my shirt because we are officially about to embark on phase two of the project, the actual removal of said stump. And for that, we will meet a stump removal expert. His name is Bill, and this is him. How are you?
Mike, good to meet you.
Not just Bill, Bill and his machine. The machine is going to change my life radically, isn't it?
It sure will.
I mean, how long have you been doing this?
About 20 years.
Okay. Back before fancy machines like this, how long would it take two guys who knew what they were doing with picks and shovels and axes to get that thing out of the front lawn?
A good weekend and a keg of beer.
I like the way you think, but I doubt that we should enjoy the latter while operating this.
That's for sure. We'll save that for later. Well, this is a stump grinder. This particular model is operated hydraulically by these three levers here.
Uh-huh.
It has a 25-horse motor on it. Turns it right into mulch, and the mulch just goes right back into the hole.
You make it sound easy.
Oh, yeah, it's easy. Let's fire it up.
That's incredible.
As you can see from the bottom of the stump, that's all the deeper it really is. These just about sit on top of the ground. They're a matter of 4 or 5 inches below grade, and the roots are tubers. Let me show you what one looks like. They look much like this, and that's about how long they are.
And how many of these would you say are in there?
Oh, a couple thousand.
Thousands.
Something this size.
The cutting wheel on this thing is stainless steel, and it has steel teeth on it with carbide tips, sharp and very, very hard, almost as hard as a diamond tip. Over here, on the other hand, we have the wood from the Bird of Paradise, and here we have the wood from the Yucca. Neither one of them had a chance.
A stump like this grows near the surface and is fairly easy to remove. But deeper stumps aren't safe from the grinder. It's relentless, burrowing 2 feet into the ground to turn roots into sawdust. A very bad day to be a stump.
Well, at this point, there's really nothing left to do but tidy up. And I think I'm going to leave that to Bill and Nick. After all, they're the professionals. Thanks, guys. Thanks to the stumper and the fellas from Capuano Tree Trimming Service. If you're a stump, you better be looking over your shoulder. They mean business. I guess I should thank the stump grinder as well. He did help.
Coming up, meet the famous fainting goats.
Faint. Faint. Yeah, lie down, faint.
Someone must have slipped me the wrong goat. We'll fix things during the break. Stay tuned.
You need some caffeine or something.
And later, I redecorate an insect house.
Make sure everybody's not going to get caught in the zipper.
I hate to see a stick caught in a zipper.
And the resident bugs put up a big stink.
Oh, man, right? It burned my nostril.
It's got a definite wang to it. Today I've come to Cross Plains, Tennessee. Beautiful part of the country out here. Specifically, I've come to visit the Chilcutt Farm. That's the Chilcutt Farmhouse behind me. And these are the Chilcutts. You got Jack.
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
Doing good.
And you got Mom Prissy. How are you?
Good.
Great. We also have goats. How many goats we got, Jack?
20.
Are goats the main reason that this is a farm?
Mm-hmm.
I also see some dogs. But people don't really farm dogs, do they?
No.
No.
Not dogs.
It's really all about the goats.
Right.
Prissy, the sweatshirt here, Fern Hill Fainters?
Yes, that's our bird name.
Why Fainters, Jack? Why do you call them Fainters?
Because they look like they faint over.
You're telling me the goats here pass out?
No, they don't pass out. They'll either stiffen up or fall over for about 5-10 seconds, and we'll get right back up.
What? Go! Oh! He's down! He's up? No, he's down. The goat just fainted.
What causes him to do that, Prissy?
It's the genetic condition called myotonia congenita. It makes their muscles stiffen up when they get scared or they're excited about something. So it might be that, you know, a noise happens and they'll fall over. It might be another goat will get after them and they'll fall over. Or it might be they're just excited about eating in the morning.
Ah! He's stuck.
Is it a defense mechanism of some kind?
No, it can be a weakness. Definitely.
Anything I would imagine could be a weakness. Mm-hmm. I guess what step one is feeding?
Many people believe goats will eat anything. Not true. They're selective eaters, preferring leaves and edible weeds. But they'll settle for a nice bowl of feed.
Here you go. Just so stiff as you can tell.
This would be their poo, I suppose.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like a rabbit poo. Little tiny pellet.
Hmm?
Huh. I'd expect something bigger from a goat.
Nope.
All right.
After feeding the goats, inevitably, there will be poo. Cleaning it up is our next task at the goat farm.
Just saying.
Shoveling poo may seem like a lowly job, but it's actually pretty important.
What are you supervising?
Because poor sanitation in the goat pen can quickly lead to disease outbreaks, which can decimate the herd.
Okay. Ow. Pile of your own poo. Why igloos? Why'd you get them igloos?
Well, one thing is we have herd queens.
A herd queen, so go like a queen bee?
Queen bee, it's the same mentality, you know. She wants to tell everybody else what to do and what not to do. And so if you have a herd queen, she's going to stand in the doorway so that nobody else can go in the barn. If it's raining, it's like it's a big joke that she makes everybody else stay out. So if they have individual igloos,
okay,
we can move the igloos around and guarantee that everybody can get in and stay warm and dry.
Next job, set up the goat elevator. This little non-threatening device will help us when we examine the goats for signs of stomach worms, a common ailment of goats which can never really be entirely eliminated, but can be controlled through careful administration of anti-worm medications. But I'm getting ahead of myself. First, I must examine my patient.
You have to check the lids. You're going to pull the lids back and see how pale they are.
It's a pale pink.
Pale pink. And so it's a little bit lighter than what we would like. And so we're going to go in and worm him today.
Bonds has worms?
They all do. But it just depends on how big a load they have. It's just like it's a normal thing for them to have.
Now that we know the Fonz has worms, we need to weigh him. Because the amount of anti-worm medication depends on it.
I make it out to be about 100 pounds. How much you want to give her?
Two.
Oops.
You just gotta stick that in his mouth.
How far down?
Not all the way.
All right.
Goats are sensitive, intelligent creatures with sensitive taste buds. And this blue worming medication is not exactly their favorite beverage.
Ugh. He needs a cookie. Here you go. A nice animal cracker. I think that might have been a cow.
Oh. Young goats, 6 months and under, are by far the most susceptible to parasitic infection because they haven't yet developed a strong immune system.
35?
Like all veterinary medications, special precautions ought to be taken to ensure that none of them enter the human food chain.
Oh.
Oh, well.
Is it bad to get worm medicine spit in your eye?
It happens, though. I don't know if it's bad, but it does happen.
Well, I fed them, cleaned up their poo, and dewormed them. But I was still unclear about this fainting business.
There must be some sort of explanation as to why goats faint.
They don't have the full story on where they actually came from. Lewisburg, Marshall County, is where they're first documented as being. And the story is that they used to put one of these goats with a more expensive animal. And so if a predator got after that animal, that this one would be at the very last of the herd and it would fall down. Then the predator could get this animal and the others would be saved.
What a terrible job. It's a scapegoat.
That's what one of the stories of where that came from was from these animals. But, you know, there's no documentation to say it, but it follows right along.
It makes perfect sense to me. All right, so the thing is, we've seen a couple of goats faint in the course of the day, but it's very difficult to actually catch the actual fainting because they're goats, you know? You can't control certain things. So we've got a zone defense here. Troy over here. Dave's going to shoot through the middle. Jack's going to hop up and down. Chris is going to get what he can. I'm going to try and flush him around here. See if we can't see an actual faint in progress.
Romero!
Fainting goats are smaller and somewhat easier to care for than larger, non-fainting goats, making them desirable for smaller farms like this one. These small goats are a threatened species, and there's less than 5,000 of them left worldwide. Though in the past, they were used for their meat, today they're mostly kept as pets, or, like on this farm, as show animals. Down at the goat show, who knows, maybe I'd win an award or two. Here, not so much. I can't catch him, I can't surprise him, and I can't make him faint. It's bad when you can't make a fainting goat faint. These goats have seen it all.
Faint! Faint! Yeah, lie down and faint. Nothing. Who wants to faint? Who's gonna faint? No one's gonna faint? I'll faint.
The goats really do faint, kind of like this. But I guess I'm not shocking enough. Oh well.
Fainting host. Very rare.
Coming up, they're not pests.
They look really happy.
They're guests at this indoor bug palace.
This millipede poo?
Yes.
Where rare and exotic species are treated like royalty by me, their humble servant.
This is poo right here?
Yeah, all that's on the top is poo.
Their humble poo servant.
So I'm in New Orleans with the crew, driving around, minding our own business, when we come across this in a parking lot. A car that says Insect Express. When you host a show called Dirty Jobs and you come across a vehicle with Insect Express written on it, you have to ask yourself questions. Questions like, why would someone write Insect Express on a car? More importantly, who would drive such a thing? Well, these are the drivers of the Insect Express, Jamie and Cokie. Hello.
Hello. Hello. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good.
Fine.
Where am I?
This is the Audubon Insectarium Insect Rearing Facility.
Say that again.
Audubon Insectarium Insect Rearing Facility.
So you rear insects here?
Right.
Right.
Right. This is the first thing I saw when I came in. These have not been reared, unless reared has changed its meaning to be dead.
Well,
no.
Those were reared.
They were reared, but not on purpose.
Accidental rearing?
Accidental rearing.
Rear-ended, you might say.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. These are considered a pest, and so we're trying to control their numbers while we're breeding all these other cool stuff.
So cool things are being bred, annoying things are being dead.
Exactly. Right. We're a part of the Audubon Nature Institute, which has a zoo and an aquarium. We also have an insectarium, which is going to be just like the aquarium is for fish. It's going to be all about bugs.
Why bugs?
Insects are very important to the environment. If we didn't have bugs, we wouldn't be here.
Live bugs, you mean?
Right.
This insect-rearing facility will supply the Audubon Institute's insectarium with most of its specimens. It also provides bugs to zoos and licensed insect exhibits all over the world. The goal is wildlife conservation. Education and outreach programs also play a big part.
Over here we have some Ixtatosoma.
Beg your pardon?
Ixtatosoma, spiny Australian stick insects.
Ixtatosoma?
Mm-hmm. This is the head.
It's all jacked up and twirled around. It looks like
a
letter.
Because they hang like this and they look like a dead leaf. So we're going to clean these guys out because their sticks are all bare and they need fresh food.
Stick insects like these are an essential part of the environment. They eat leaves, which help control the plant population in the wild. Their fallen poo becomes food for insects on the ground and also fertilizes the soil. To keep the stick insects alive and happy at the insect-rearing facility, foliage in their cages is changed at least twice a week.
Up. There you go. Swing it out. It could be a little top-heavy, so I'm going to hold it a little bit.
Thanks.
Pick out any dead ones. If you see any dead ones in there, there's a dead one
right
there.
That's a dead one?
That's a dead one.
Why did he die?
Made lots of babies.
So, he's exhausted.
He's exhausted. See, that one doesn't look very good, so we're going to use that.
I got to say, it looks an awful lot like the other ones.
You can put that one in there.
Uh-huh.
Put the top in first, please.
Yes, dear.
Thank you.
Oh, wow. They will hurt you.
Yeah.
Yeah. An amazing creature.
And you can hang them on the sides,
oh, dear.
That's all right.
we're locked down in here, aren't we?
It's a USDA-approved insect containment facility.
USDA ICF.
The USDA has certain regulations that we have to follow because they're very interested in having these things that are not native to the United States. They don't want them to
become native.
Become native. We were talking about USDA, and all of our trash has to be first frozen at 0 degrees in a biohazard box, and then a biohazard company comes and picks up our box and takes it away and incinerates it.
These are leaf cutter ants?
Yes, those are leaf cutter ants. We provide them with leaves. And then they cut up the leaves in these little bitty fragments, and you can see how they're going into the hole right there.
This little tube.
Yes. Just like humans, they have a dump. And it's not in the middle of their city. It's on the perimeter, just like us. You never find a dump in the middle of a city. It's always on the perimeter.
It's always on the outskirts.
Right.
The wrong side of the tracks.
Wrong side of the tracks, exactly. That's their feces and their urine, and they also put their dead bodies in there. This produces a lot of nitrogen gas,
mm-hmm.
and it's bad for the colony. So we need to clean these out periodically.
And they know it's bad for their colony, which is why
they put it
on the other side of the tracks.
Exactly. So we're going to help them out and purge their dump for them. And there are ants that are living in there. They're dump worker ants. And
that is a bad job. How do you become the garbage man for the ant?
Basically, the older ants are the ones that are ending up working at the dump, because the idea is they're already close to the end of their lives anyway, and so they're already in place.
So there's no real retirement golden years.
That is the retirement. You retire
right.
Working in the dump.
The ant, for an old ant, you basically go deal with corpses and poo.
Right, exactly. We coat the sides of the tub with this insectoslip. It's a very slippery substance that the ants can't climb out of.
It's insectoslip.
Sometimes it gets on there real good. Okay.
It comes out there, I see.
Yeah.
Look at him running.
Okay.
This comes off the top.
Right. And then you can smell it.
I do.
It smells very ammonia-like.
Yeah, it does. So it smells more like pee than poo.
We want to separate the live ants from the poo and the dead fungus. And
now, what's this? Look at the size of that.
Yes, that is a soldier, which I'll try to get out of there without it biting me. But if you want to look at the size of the jaws on that, they can actually cut shoe leather. And if those jaws were to get me,
you'd make a real high
sound. I would make a high-pitched squeal, yes, and I would bleed.
Those are teeth?
They're jaws, but the ends of them are serrated, so.
Yeah. So it might as well be teeth.
Yeah, and when they bite, they try to rock their head back and forth like this, like tearing. She's trying to tear at me right now.
So it's a girl soldier?
Yes. All of the workers in the colony are females.
Soldier ants patrol the outer fringes of the foraging trails, protecting other ants that are carrying leaves and unable to defend themselves.
How would this poo work as fertilizer?
It's excellent fertilizer, actually.
I would
That's
think.
How you can find colonies in the Costa Rican rainforest.
Mm-hmm.
You can find a lot of young upstart trees coming.
So when this gets put back, it'll be empty, of course.
It'll be empty. We do save a little chunk of it so that they'll smell it and they'll know that this is the dump. We're seeding the dump. And then we just take a pinch.
Go ahead, show me.
You won't. Oh, no, you take a pinch.
Take a pinch.
Just a little pinch.
Don't say between your cheek and gum.
No, just in your fingers, like that.
Uh-huh.
Dump the rest. It's right in there. This is the biohazard box. And you may want to wrap it on the side and, you know, try and get most of it out of there.
Would you hold the poo for a second?
I'll hold the poo, yes, absolutely. And then, there you go. That'll work.
All right, ready?
Yep.
Go.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. All the way on?
Yep, that's good. That's
they're very susceptible to air pressure changes. Now all of a sudden there's another chamber there, and they're going to come check it out.
This is where they all start.
This is the foraging chair area, yes.
Got it.
So we kind of tap it like that, lightly.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Now, are the leaf cutter ants, are they the kind that we have in our lawn? Are they the kind we see when they're on the sidewalk, just walking around?
No, those are fire ants.
Fire ants.
Yes, and those are carnivorous. These are completely herbivorous. They just eat leaves.
Coming up, a bug that has some personal qualities that really stink.
No. I mean, I've smelled a lot of things, a lot of bad things. That was surprising, and the way you didn't really warn me at all was really nice.
Well, we're going to take some of these sticks out. We're going to also take the jar out and change the foliage.
When you say sticks, you mean the bugs?
The bugs and the sticks. But you need to wear these goggles because these guys spit.
Spitting
well,
bugs?
Well, it's more of a spray that comes out from behind their heads. This is the male. This is the female. The males actually find the females before the female's even sexually mature. And he stakes her out and he rides on her back until she's ready to go.
I mean, for what, weeks, months, days, hours, years?
Probably a couple of weeks. They'll spray on your hand.
Yeah, I smelled it earlier. It's...
There it goes.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Ugh. Well, just so you know, that's what the spray is.
You don't want that. And wash your hands after you're through, because if you accidentally rub it in your eyes, you're going to be really sorry.
Smell this, man. Look at that. Dave loves to smell stuff.
Oh, man.
Right?
Burn my nostril.
It's got a definite wang to it.
God.
This is horrible.
The opposite of a brain freeze.
Yeah.
See how the white stuff, when she sprayed it, my hand was cupped over and it just went right back on her.
This particular species of walking stick is native to the United States. The defensive chemical is called terpene aldehyde, and it's more of an irritant than an actual poison. In fact, spiders and some other predaceous insects appear to be unaffected by it.
And you can grab like three or four of them and just kind of grab them and catch them. Because they're going to start spreading out and running all over the place if you don't go quick.
And they cling like, I mean, they're very strong. Here, I just ripped this one right off the back of a female. He's going to be livid.
Don't worry about it. He'll find another girlfriend.
Yeah, but he was right in the middle of, you know. Oh.
Is it getting in your nose?
Yeah, I got some in my nose. Come here, buddy. Sprayed on me anyway, didn't you?
Ooh, man, the spray was just going everywhere.
Spray everywhere. I don't like that smell. I really don't.
I can't think of anybody who does.
But you don't understand. I mean, I smelled a lot of things, a lot of bad things. That was surprising. And the way you didn't really warn me at all was really nice.
Okay, make sure everybody's not going to get caught in the zipper.
You hate to see a stick caught in a zipper.
Yeah.
These are the American grasshopper. This is Schistocerca americana. It's the genus and species name on that.
Schistocerca?
Schistocerca americana.
Uh-huh. Are those two up on the upper right there having sex?
Yes, they are.
How about that?
Yes, they are. They are mating.
Do they prefer to hang?
They like the heat. So they're going to the lights because of the heat. Now it's time to suck up the poo.
Great. Should I get these little like dingleberries hanging
yeah,
down through here?
Yeah, you can try to get those. Now, don't forget that you have to suck inside the cage, too.
Right. I'm in.
Yeah, just suck up all that stuff there. Yeah, that's looking good. Virtually poo-free. Are we ready to kill the vac?
Yeah, kill the vac.
Kill the vac.
Before I suck up somebody here by accident. We've sucked the poo. And we've fed them, and they look really happy. Look, except...
Are those two still going at it?
Yeah.
Don't trip over the hose.
I will follow the green curly hose to Cokie.
We're gonna clean out some millipedes. We have a bit of a problem. We've gotten roaches in our millipedes.
Oh, no. Roaches and millipedes living together.
You know, it's a really bad thing. Okay, now they're about this long.
Yeah.
And they're black. They're about that big around.
Do they really have a million legs?
No. They have 200 to 500. Lucky there. You found a millipede, the first scoop. I can't believe it.
Is this real?
That's a millipede.
Something you buy in a magic shop.
Okay, there's two more, or maybe.
Why is he all curled up?
Because he was asleep and you woke him up.
I'll do that. So I'm looking for millipedes, finding roaches.
Yeah.
And when I find the roach, take the roach and the dirt and just put it over here.
Right.
What flavor are they?
They're Suriname roaches.
Suriname?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a country in Africa?
Mm-hmm. And they just got in here, and we really don't want them in here because they eat all of the millipedes' food.
Where did the millipedes come from?
The millipedes came from Africa, too, but we did not get them from Africa. We actually got them from someone at the zoo who raises them.
Aha. Uh-huh.
There you go. You found the medium-sized one.
Medium-sized millipede. What's his role, her role?
They're decomposers. They take wood and vegetable matter, and they break it down into soil.
Get him off me, would you please? Thank you. What's his front? What's his back?
Well, which way is he going?
Well, he's coming toward my foot, and he's got two little...
That's the front.
Is he blind? Because he just ran into my boot.
No, he'll probably climb up your boot.
He's going around it. He seems surprised by it.
Millipedes have compound eyes, similar to those of flies, and two pairs of legs for each of their body segments. Centipedes have only one pair per segment.
Roach. See, in any other situation, I'd be smashing. But that would be bad here, wouldn't it? This is sort of a roach sanctuary. This is millipede poo?
Yes.
Oh, look, you just pooed again.
If an animal tries to eat them, they put out a very nasty-tasting chemical, and it deters other animals from eating them.
Sure. What exactly is this job called?
Getting the soil wet. Get all the way to the bottom, please.
Yes, ma'am. Is this a real job?
It is.
I don't believe it is.
It really is. Jamie, do I do this?
It's hard to hear you when you talk that high.
It is. It's mixing substrate.
No, mixing substrate.
It's not bad enough.
There. Give everybody a nice, generous piece of real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Space them out.
Catch.
Oh, we're going to feed them. I've explained the banana. Unless this was for me. Come and get it, you millipedes.
Coming up.
You're going to trust me with the Batmobile?
Fast cars and assassins.
We have some white-eyed assassin bugs from Africa.
Lots more action in the bug world. Next.
These are our feeder crickets. This is what we use to feed our predaceous insects. You see their orange peel? That we need to give them some fresh orange.
These are bait, but you have to feed the bait.
I have to feed the bait.
I don't want to dance on the head of a moral dilemma, but I mean, why are some crickets worth saving, studying, and you know, classifying, and other crickets are food?
When you're keeping something that eats other insects, you have.
You gotta eat.
You gotta eat, right.
You gotta eat.
Right.
Bottom line, it just sucks to be at the bottom of the food chain.
Exactly.
Okay. And that's where we are.
That's where we are, pretty much, yes.
Unless you're an orange.
But we still, yeah.
A little albino?
That is a molting cricket. It just molted. It's coming out of its previous exoskeleton, and now it's going into adulthood there. Actually, yes, see the wing butt? The wings are there. Once it finishes eclosing, which is the proper term for that.
Eclosing?
Eclosing. Then it will be an adult cricket.
Big day. So you're coming out.
Right.
On this, your big special day, we'll be eating you.
Yes.
Do they like the juice, or do they just like the oranges?
Just the oranges themselves.
All right.
By tomorrow, these will be gone. And then you just kind of take it, and I'll let you do it.
Take it and shake it?
Just kind of tap it over that, and so you might want to turn it on its side like this and just kind of go, dunk.
Should I make that sound when I do it?
You can make that sound if you want. Dunk,
dunk, dunk, dunk.
These are predaceous diving beetles here from the Louisiana swamp. You're going to reach in here, and you're going to grab a handful of crickets, and you're going to smush them. Then you're going to put your hand in the water, and that will stir them up, and they'll come, and they will feed. It's kind of like chumming for sharks.
Dude, you have a dark side, man.
I'm sorry.
Here you are again, a nice khaki shirt with a name tag. Jamie, with a Y. Hey, everything's great in insect land. Grab the cricket, smash it to pieces, turn them into paste, put it underwater, drown them, shake your hand. Feed the predaceous diving beetle.
Nature is not a nice thing.
No, it's not. And you know, I always laugh when people talk about Mother Nature. You know, remember the old commercial, not nice to... Mother Nature's kind of heartless.
Yeah.
It's got a good fistful.
Yeah, that's good. Squish them.
Squish them.
Yep. And they start to ooze. Here you go. It's okay, man. They're nice and dead now. Still some that are going to be hanging on.
That's okay. Too late for you. Okay, now, underwater?
Just, in the water like that.
Shake my hand around?
Yep.
Oh, dear.
The feeding frenzy should begin. See, they're freaking out. They're like,
holy food, yummy! These diving beetles are absolutely predaceous.
Absolutely predaceous.
So the predaceous diving beetles, extraordinary predator.
Yeah. Oh, and they're very happy now that you gave them their nice crickets.
Well, I've got some crickets left over.
We have some white-eyed assassin bugs from Africa that would love to have some crickets.
What are the white-eyed assassins?
These are white-eyed assassin bugs.
Are those their eyes that are white?
No, those are fake eye spots. They use those to scare predators. They sit and wait for a prey item to come by, and then they jump on it, and they stab it with their beak, and they release digestive enzymes in there, and then they slurp up the insides like a milkshake.
Oh, God!
shot at that.
Oh, jeez Louise.
Hello, assassin bugs. Dinner time.
Oh, we got some feeding going on. Boy, he jumped off the side.
Let's just have a look at the
proboscis. The beak that I kept saying is the technical term for it.
The proboscis.
There might be some more activity on the backside here. Let's see what's going on over here.
Oh, yeah, good grief. A bloodbath over here. Here.
There you go.
Okay. I'm going to let him... Oh, look at that. He just attacked.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, my God. Oh.
It's the end of the day, and everything's in the biohazard, ready to go for biohazard.
So it just has to freeze.
Has to freeze, then the biohazard guy comes and picks it up. Your job is to take some, the stick insects that we took out of the container over there.
Yes.
And you're going to take them in the Insect Express to the zoo.
Did you say, can I drive the Insect Express?
Yes.
You're going to trust me with the Batmobile?
Mm-hmm.
Sweet. Where are the bugs?
The Insect Express is off to the zoo. Say hello and goodbye to a nice amorpha, Buprestoides.
It's going to be great.
I just need to take a quick second and leave you with a very important message.
Good evening, my name is John Rowe.
Good evening, my name is John Rowe.
I'm Mike Rowe's father.
I'm Mike Rowe's father.
I'm begging you.
I'm begging you.
For the love of God.
For the love of God.
Please keep my son employed.
Please keep my son employed.
By sending us your ideas for dirty jobs.
By sending us your ideas for dirty jobs.
If you don't send us your ideas.
And if you don't send us your ideas.
Our boy. Who we love very much.
Whom we love very much.
Could very likely come back home again.
Could very likely come back home again.
And that would be very bad. Let's not drag the Lord into it. I said, and that would be very bad.
But you said God.
Mother, for crying out loud, you still have your hearing, don't you? I'm giving you your line. Has it come to this? I'm whispering everything. All you have to do is repeat.
I did good, didn't I, son?
Discovery.com/dirty jobs. If you have an idea, obviously, I could use it. Don't quit your day job.
I'm sorry. I thought you said it.
Inches of steel. Doubt we use this. We could. It's tough to say. Definitely use this. No, it's Discovery. You know what? I'm not going to take this.
Send it to voicemail.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
If you want to start to try to.
I told them never to call me when I'm dealing with Boo.